Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we have a couple colleagues with us to discuss, best way to put it, transition. From clinical to administrative. We have a co-host with us. Welcome back, Julie Rudy. How you doing, Julie?
Pretty good, Eli. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in and helping me interview a gentleman who many of us in California know just a little bit. And if you don't, you should. We'd like to welcome a dear colleague, Mike West. How you doing, Mike?
Good morning, Eli. Great to be here. Hi, Julie.
Hey, Mike.
Thanks for coming today. And for those of you who don't know Mike, Mike has had a very interesting career. We've known each other for many years at this point. He started as an athletic trainer, moved out of athletic training after a while into an administrative role, and we're going to discuss that transition. Correct me if I'm wrong. First, it was athletic director as an AD position, then vice principal.
Well, I first got out of the training room proper, if you will, getting a teaching credential. I was teaching classes, athletic training classes. They hired a new athletic trainer to work the athletic training room regularly. And then I just worked in there as a second individual, if you will.
Then, almost as a per diem
yes.
person.
Sure, call it that. And then I got the opportunity to open up high school as an athletic director. And so I was still, again, teaching sports medicine. I was in the athletic training room regularly, but it wasn't my primary role.
So you were more, I don't like using the term assistant because there is no true clinical degree as an assistant athletic trainer. So I just say you were the second athletic trainer.
Call me an associate.
An associate. Okay. Like that. We'll go with associate. Jot that down. I'll try that with our new athletic trainer, Victoria, see what she thinks about that. I'll call her associate. Then from that role, you went into more the administrative side. So you started going into the administrative as a school, was it vice principal first?
Assistant principal, yeah. Assistant principal for 3 years.
What school was that at?
I went to Patriot High School. After I opened Chino Hills High School as the first athletic director, stayed there for about 7 years, and then moved over into an administrative role as an assistant principal at Patriot. Stayed there for 3 years, and then went to an alternative ed site, what they called the Learning Center. It was actually the expulsion school of the district, along with credit recovery, independent study, and adult education. And that was my first principal's responsibility there for 2.5 years. Then I went to Hoop Valley High School as their comprehensive principal for 2.5 years, and then transitioned over to a different district, Martin Luther King High School, as their principal, where I stayed there for a total of 8 years.
I was going to say, I remember you being there for quite some time. So mm-hmm. 8 years, that's two cycles. That's a good term for a principal.
Yeah. There aren't that many anymore that stick around for longer than 4 or 5. So all told, I had 13 years as a high school principal. So I felt it was a pretty good run.
And then from there, you've jumped into your newest adventure. And I use that term very specifically because I'm sure right now during football season, every Thursday, Friday is an adventure. You are the commissioner of athletics for CIF Southern Section.
That is correct. We're just now starting to ramp up into our fall playoff season. I think I might have had my last free weekend for the next 5 weeks this last weekend, because we're going to be out and about from here on in. So it's an exciting time.
It is. This time of year is exciting for all sports. I know our water polo team at St. Francis was excited. They found out they made it into the first round. So we have an extra game to cover on Tuesday, I believe. And everybody else just seems to keep rolling. And now we're warming up with all the other sports, wrestling, basketball, soccer, you name it. We've got tons of sports coming up, and you get to oversee all of it. Lucky you.
Well, yes, absolutely. You know, that's the fun part of the stuff is to, we're doing all the bracketing, making sure everybody is in where they're supposed to be. And once those brackets are out, the games start to play. And then I get a fortunate opportunity to go to the championship games, as many of them I can make, and watch some great sports and hand out a few trophies and shake a few hands. That's the fun piece.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun watching those young men, young women get excited about their accomplishments, right?
Absolutely.
Let's dive into this. And what brought you into that initial spark, if I remember correctly, at Cal Poly SLO, that pushed you into athletic training as a profession?
Well, it was actually prior to Cal Poly SLO. I was at West Valley College in Saratoga. I was in my second year there. And I was trying to figure out, okay, people always say, do something that you really enjoy so that you never work a day in your life. And I was always thinking, what is it that I really enjoy? And at the time, it was athletics. I was a cross-country and track athlete. Really, really enjoyed athletics as a means of just my daily cycle, if you will. And I thought, well, how can I make athletics a part of my career? And so I was kind of torn between, do I want to become a coach and teacher? Or I had taken this, I had injured myself and got into the athletic training room and saw this other avenue that I could pursue and ended up making that choice for myself. So when I transferred over to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, that's what I transferred into kinesiology with an athletic training emphasis. And the rest was history as far as that was concerned.
And what a great place to go to college. My youngest is there right now. Oh, that is such a beautiful location. I love Cal Poly.
Center of the universe. I wish there was a way I could have stayed there.
I feel the same way before I leave every time I'm visiting her. So I get that. When you were doing athletic training clinically, what, if I remember right, it was Chino Hills, correct?
Or started Chino? Off at Ayala High School.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I went to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and then, went to the University of Arizona for my master's degree. Got my master's degree there.
Also in athletic training, correct?
In athletic training, yeah. And so then I wanted to, met a woman and she lived in Southern California. So I had to find a place near where she was located because she'd already gotten a job as a teacher. So I needed to find an avenue somewhat close to her since I was planning on marrying her that summer. And so some opportunities at the high schools came about. And that's where some former contacts at the University of Arizona knew of this situation, put me together with the athletic director there and ended up getting hired at athletic trainer way back in 1994.
Wow. Kind of funny. Two things that pop up with a lot of people. A, got into it because, well, got injured playing sports and kind of found the athletic training room. And B, met a woman, knew we were going to get married, and had to get somewhere near her so I didn't blow it.
Sometimes it's met a man and going somewhere, but
that's true.
The norm.
Yep, that's very true. That's just kind of fun how you ended up down in Southern California for all these years at this point, 94 until now, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm, that's correct.
So you're in the training room, you're working hard, you're being the best athletic trainer you can be. What made you start thinking about changing your role into teaching and then or into an administrative role?
So, well, first off, you know, as I got into the high school setting, my first thoughts when I first got there was, you know, I would kind of make a name for myself, spend 3, 4, or 5 years, whatever, kind of make a name for myself and then move up. And I put that in quotation marks because, you know, I think the initial thought is, well, the high school setting, it's, you know, it's more of a stepping stone to bigger and better things. But when I got there and I really started to develop relationships with the students, you know, really get a good relationship with the coaches and the families of the community. That was one of the bigger things. I really enjoyed the high school setting. I felt that it was a great place to be. The way that, you know, I handled our business, you know, there was an appreciation for how I did things. You know, when you were a college student and in certain areas, it's more of, hey, we need you to do this, 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 and this. Not a lot of thank yous. But in the high school setting, we got a lot of appreciation for doing things the right way, if you will, and handling it as a professional entity as opposed to an icer and a taper or whatever you want to call it. So I really enjoyed the high school setting, and it wasn't until I actually got this job as a commissioner that I wasn't anywhere else but a high school campus. So it was really one of those things that really set me in the right direction. And then I got involved politically because I wanted to, you know, I had an ego, you know, I'm a high school athletic trainer. So what am I going to do? So I kind of got involved.
No idea what you're talking about there. No clue at all.
Exactly. So I started to get involved in certain things with the secondary school committee and so on and so forth. But what I also was starting to think through was, unfortunately at the time, you know, what's the financial aspects of where I'm at? And I felt that, you know, being a teacher, I could get on the teacher's pay scale. You've had the better benefits, the better retirement possibilities. But I also felt that I could stay involved in the athletic training room. So I became, if you will, the curriculum director at the high school, teaching the classes. So I taught ROP and I taught a regular class along with some world history classes because that's what I was qualified to teach. And then we were able to hire someone else. So in essence, there was two of us there. So that's really what made, you know, some great times for me. I could have some flexibility as far as I didn't have to spend every night, late nights on a practice, but I went to every game. I covered things as need be. And so it was nice to have two of us there in that fashion. And I felt that worked for, and I could have done that for any number of years. It was great.
Did you ever have any draw anyplace else? You know, you talked about how much you liked it there, but were there ever conversations and opportunities and then you just kept staying at the high school level, or what has kept you there?
I had conversations with people that were at, you know, community college level, you know, pro level. You know, you always want to say, okay, what would it be like to be in the football sidelines? You know, and I do remember having a conversation with Lindsay McLean, who was the head athletic trainer for the 49ers way back in the day, about those types of things as he was looking for individuals. And, you know, it just didn't work out, but it wasn't, you know, it's one of those things it's neat. But again, my comfort zone ended up being at the high school level. And so once I really got settled in there, there was no draw where I had to go to the community college level or the D3, or, you know, I just didn't have that need from an ego perspective, because I was getting filled in other avenues and I was really enjoying my time at the setting.
You know, the funny thing is, you said one of my favorite comments that I hear from college students all the time, or the high school students asking me, why didn't I? You know, high school is a stepping stone. We actually did an episode, and Julie was one of the guests on that, about the step up from the college level to the high school level, and just the difference and how impactful it can be to make such a big difference in someone's earlier years, athletically, medically. And it's always fun. I have a couple former interns that I can tease. Stepping stone, huh? Okay. But just like many of us, I swore up and down I'd never work at a high school. I swore up and down I'd never teach. I swore up and down I'd be in the pros. 27 years later, I'm at the same high school, loving every second for many of the same reasons that you discussed. You feel like you're making a difference. You're connected. You get your ego taken care of. Not that I have a big ego. It's, you know, it's in check today. But at the same time, it's a great place to be. It really is. So it's kind of fun to hear how it's evolved for you.
Ultimately, I would probably still be there. But my last year at Ayala, there I had an opportunity to be an assistant to the athletic director at the time. You know, I was teaching my sports med class, a few world history. They gave me a PE class, and then they gave me a period off to do some of the assistance with the athletic director. You know, at the time, the World Wide Web was just starting to go, and they needed someone that could try to put together a website. So I wasn't an expert, but I could at least figure things out. So I started doing those things and scheduling games and whatnot. And then the district decided they were going to open up a brand new school. And it's something that we had heard about, but they were actually going through the motions of hiring. And one of the first individuals that they hired was their athletic director. And I asked around and I was talking to people and said, hey, what do you think? What are the thoughts here? And I got some good feedback from it. So I said, well, what a great opportunity to open up a brand new school where you get a chance to help pick the mascot, pick the colors, hire all the coaches, order all the equipment, help pick the color schemes, you name it. So it was just intriguing for me. And I was like, well, let's give it a shot and see what happens. And threw my name in the hat and they pulled it out.
That's kind of exciting. That's a fun little antidote there because not many people get that opportunity.
No, it's to this day one of the best things I ever did, one of the hardest things I ever did. And after I left, when I left Chino Hills and went on beyond that, I hadn't been back to like a football game in I think it was 17 years. And I actually went a couple of weeks ago to the Ayala Chino Hills Battle for the Bone, and I got to see so many people and just kind of it was really neat to be there because that campus I started there before there was any construction. They hadn't even dug their first hole yet when I got
Oh,
there.
that's really cool.
So to go back and see some things and bring back the memories, it's a part of me is still buried there, or at least part of that place for sure.
I presume at this point, several people that you built that with are still on site.
One or two, not as many as I would have hoped, but there's still one or two that are there. Yes, actually, one of the volleyball coach that I hired was still there. She was I saw her the other day. It was great. There was a couple people, but there's been a lot of transition there.
That's awesome. So, Mike, how did your clinical skills and knowledge as an athletic trainer translate to the success in administrative roles, particularly with your education and sports leadership?
The clinical skills, I think the problem solving, if you're thinking of how am I going to evaluate an injury and the process that you go through step by step, those types of skills and the comfort with those types of skills. It wasn't as all of us when we first start. It's a little, it's you got to go into the book and read more and continue to go. But I think that process, that analytical process, was helpful in evaluating all sorts of different types of problems. I can equate doing an injury evaluation to solving a problem on a car. You go through the same processes. So you put a problem in front. What is the system that you use? So I think that had something to do with it. I think as much as anything, I always treated my high school program, if you will, in quotes, as if it was a college program. I always tried to outfit our students in a professional manner. I always tried to take care of them in such a way. And I always tried to make it so that anything coming out of my office was as professionally done as possible. Whether that be emails, whether that be, written correspondence, just the perception that I wanted to create for myself was something of professional. And Eli may remember this. I actually, my early days as the high school or the secondary school chair, I wrote an NHEA news article on professional attire.
I remember that, yeah.
Because, if you're wearing a t-shirt that says "When it swells, ice it" on the sidelines chewing sunflower seeds all the time, I'm not sure that belies a medical professional. So I always tried to dress the part and make sure that everything was taken care of in that fashion. And I think that in and of itself promoted, well, gave the impression of Ken, of whether it was true or not, that I had my stuff in one sock. And it's those things that allowed for some doors to open that might not have opened for others if they hadn't done things similarly.
That's great. Thank you.
Oh.
I kind of feel the same way in the role that I'm in too, coming from college to high school, is we are preparing them for that next level. That really resonated when you said that, is that's the way I feel as well, is, we get to prepare them and set them up for success at that next level too.
Yeah, expectations that you have of the students, the expectations you set for yourself, the expectations that, in essence, you set for the teams that you work with as well. It's all very similar.
And we really have a chance to make a difference in their life. That's probably my favorite part. So fun, so fun. You mentioned something, and I had forgotten about that article. Let me ask your opinion. There's a little bit going around right now in the athletic training community, secondary schools,
There's
and
an
this is
article
purely
just came
opinion.
out.
What's
Another
that?
an article just came out about that. I think it was on, I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw someone wrote another article about that.
And one of the big things around the area that I'm working, just love to get your opinion on it. whether athletic trainers are appropriate in a polo or should we be in scrubs on the sideline?
I don't see anybody doing any treatments, blood work, things on the sidelines all that often. I don't see scrubs being the issue. Is that really a thing now?
I
scrubs?
Swear, I've had several people, one of my colleagues, he's pushing it right now.
That's lazy.
It's an opinion thing. So my comment was, I don't get it.
That's lazy. Just like in the older days, it was, well, I got in this profession so I could wear shorts and t-shirts to work. Sure. I don't suppose if nobody is overseeing you at the high school setting and knows what they're talking about, which is most of the time, they're not going to have set an expectation for you as far as dress is concerned. You've got to set your own. If I've got a guy that's on a sidelines just in scrubs, all right, are you a nurse? Are you, what are you? Who are you? What is your profession? Because scrubs does not, there's no equal signs between scrubs and athletic trainers. Khakis and collared shirts and those types of things. Sure, you can see an athletic training convention from a mile away just based on how they're dressed. By and large,
so
it doesn't
true.
Mean that there needs to be a change or there couldn't be a change, but collared shirt and some appropriate pants, in my opinion, shorts if you have to, but at least coordinated to me is the key. Because if I'm talking to, I've got parents coming in and asking medical questions, and they want to take me seriously, I'm not sure scrubs does it. Other professional wear is the way it's nonverbal communication. That was one of my favorite lessons when I was speaking with my students and doing things, is that you speak volumes by not saying anything. You choose how you wish to be perceived every morning when you go to the closet and put on the clothes that you wear. And don't think you don't. You know, if you're wearing the t-shirts and things that you just get around with your friends, you're choosing to be perceived as such. Administrators, high school administrators, are oftentimes wearing suit and tie because they wish to be perceived a certain way and want to do that. If they're deviating it from it, then that's likely intentional. It's not random. I think same thing should be done for high school athletic trainers in particular, because A, we don't get this much respect as we need to in the first place. In order to engender that respect, you have to dress in accordance with what it is that your profession is. And to me, scrubs ain't it.
I totally agree.
So to bring in a different point of view, perhaps, we used scrubs a lot during COVID when I was at Sonoma State in clinic with COVID. You know, they're easy to clean, easy to have something underneath to go home,
yes,
type of thing. You know, I have seen athletic trainers on the sidelines in scrubs that look kind of like the joggers, and perhaps they wear polos with them. But I have definitely seen a lot more of that. The thought is the way you're able to keep them cleaner and have them at work, change into work, go in, risk mitigation there perhaps. And some of them are really comfortable, but I hear you, Mike. I don't wear them. I don't wear scrubs at high school because I feel like there needs to be a differentiation there. And the parents and athletes need to see me of that role. I do wear polos, but.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just too old school. I don't know.
Not at all.
I've always had that opinion. And so it's for it to go a different direction, I'm like, nah, I'm not seeing it.
And my comment was, I'm not a physician. I'm not a nurse. I don't want someone approaching me on the sideline thinking I am anything but an athletic trainer.
But you are a healthcare provider.
I am, but not all healthcare providers wear scrubs.
I know. That's
including me. Thanks for giving me your opinion on that. I was curious when it popped up. Always fun to see what directions we go in. Pivoting back to the direction that I know you probably the best for, leadership and the development of leadership. I know that's something that you did for quite some time. And in your current position, I presume it's something you do almost every day. How did you really decide to get involved in state leadership and then ultimately regional, national in the athletic training profession? And how did you use that as a way to really hone your skills to go into an administrative role?
Well, that's a great question. There's a long journey there to go through. When I was at the high, like I mentioned before, got into the high school setting, was getting much more comfortable there, and getting all the information from the Athletic Training Association, the Far West. There wasn't as much CATA, but it was more Far West back in the day. There was just more communication from that group and the NATA. You know, I was looking at that saying, okay, who's the secondary school committee chair? And it really wasn't much to be had there. I remember there was a local meeting in a region, gosh, was it region four? Might have been region four. Julie Max happened to be there, you know.
Oh, wow.
It was something that was, we were for CEUs. And I just made mention that I would have an interest. You know, I'm at the secondary school setting. I've got an ego. I didn't say that, but, you know, in my own head. I felt like there's, you know, I would like to be in it, get involved and be a part of, I didn't, not knowing what that would be, but I just felt like, you know, I could get involved in the high school setting and promote it. Because again, I was a convert, if you will, to the benefits of being at the high school setting and felt I could promote and work through that. Eventually, I ended up getting selected to do that position. And I think once I got that experience and that taste of leadership, it just kind of followed through. People have always said that I had somewhat of a natural knack as far as that's concerned, the way I run meetings and whatnot. And I still remember to this day, you know, people always remembered me for, I was a secondary school guy that always wore the suit. I think it was the exact same suit every year for a number of years, because I think I only had one at the time. It might even been the same tie. But I always, you know, anytime it came to the Far West meetings where you had to do a little report out, I always had my suit and was ready to go and you know, did those things. So it just ended up becoming something that I was enthralled in. And kind of like with my opening the doors, when I saw something that was going on and I felt I could do that, you know, I had my own thoughts and I felt I could do a good job at that, whether I felt it was better or worse. I just felt like I could do the job. That's kind of where things progressed from. Maybe the secondary school setting into, you know, I went Far West public relations for a little while, and then governmental affairs, of course. That I didn't reach out for. That someone came to me and said, hey, we want you to do that. And I was like, no. And they said, we really need you to do that. And I was like, all right, let's give it a shot.
The new phrase for that is voluntoldism, not volunteerism.
It wasn't voluntold. It was just like, hey, we feel you've got the right chops for doing what it is, you know, whatever that meant. We feel that you're the right person for this particular position. And so I said, well, okay, if there's no one else better, I guess I'll step it up and do my best. Things went the way they went for the number of years, if you don't know the story. But then, and then subsequently to CATA president and so on. So just along the way, continue to learn and grow and have more confidence in myself and our abilities. And I guess finding that vision and direction that you want to go and being able to find the most direct path there is one of the bigger keys to doing that.
You balance all that with your what you did on a daily basis.
Balance. Ooh.
That's a great question.
Juggle.
you know, a lot of extra time, a lot of, you know, time after work and or before work. You know, it's, you know, there are so many hours in the day, but you find avenues to if it's really something you want to do. You know, you're not gonna, when the clock hits four, you're not out the door with everybody is, and don't let the hit you at the butt on the way out. You're spending as much time as you need to do the things that are required of you on any given day, and sometimes that might be until 4:30. That sometimes it might be until 8 or later. I've never been a clock watching guy. It's just, you know, if it happens to be the time that it's time to go, then that's great. If it's not, I'm going to stay until I get things done. And in my earlier years, when it came to all the different things I was doing, there was avenues by which I could mix and match and do some of the things that I enjoyed doing. I will say once I became the principal at King, that was a different beast altogether. And that's kind of where, you know, if those of you that have known me, you know, I was really involved up to that point. And I kind of fell off the face because that was a different animal altogether. I had to be the principal at Martin Luther King High School. Whereas in before I could work as the my other positions that I'd had, couldn't do that there. So that's where I had to really make a choice. Like you say, Julie, you know, how could I do it? Well, I found out that I couldn't in that job, but the other ones I was able to find avenues to still stay involved.
Now you did say something that I'm very curious about. Call it a day at 4 p.m. What's that like?
I still don't know.
Okay, just check in, because I've never, ever, ever experienced that. I was quite jealous for a second there.
There are, you know, in my current office, the hours are from 7:30 to 4. I commute from Riverside out to Los Alamitos. I'm usually here by 6:30, 6:45. And then I leave whenever I'm done. And most everybody else, I see them, they're all flying through the wind going out. Not that that's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's bad at all. It's just when I'm done, I'm done. And sometimes, again, that's 4:30. Sometimes it's 5:30. Sometimes it's whenever it needs to be. So, again, call me old school, but that's never been something that, you know, the quality of life is my quality of mental health. When I need to come in early to get my cup of coffee and do things, that's my quality of life. It's not making sure I don't get them in earlier than 7:30 when I'm asked to be there.
Very good.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to aacitest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
You brought up MLK, and what a phenomenal school. Getting that was, I'm sure, pressure-filled. Such a respected school. What a, not just athletically, but just the community itself. It is a very well-known institution. So I understand when you dropped off the face of the earth and seeing, oh, he's the principal now there, that's not a 40-hour-a-week job. That's more athletic training hours, 50 to 60. That's a large school, well-known, respected for very specific reasons. And I'm sure that took a lot of work, a lot of time. What was it like to be a principal at a school like that?
There was a lot of great things that took place there. First off, it was the school in my community. I had a 6-minute commute, which was fantastic for the time that I had it.
Julie can relate to that. I can't. I'm jealous of both of you.
Yeah, it makes a world of difference being able to, I can walk to work if I want to.
Yeah. My kids were there. When I got there, my oldest was a senior, and in the 8 years, I was able to see all my kids graduate from there. It was the community was very demanding. Well, I won't say demanding necessarily in a negative way. There was a lot of expectations from the community of the school. The staff there was still a lot from the original time when it had opened, which was, you know, at that time, almost 20 years when it opened. And there was great leadership that was prior to me that had set the stage. So there was a lot of expectations, a lot of things to be mindful of. That takes a lot of energy, too, because you're under the microscope when it comes to, you know, expectations of individual teachers from parents, some many times unrealistic. Expectations of coaches and of teams, very much unrealistic. There's a lot of pressure when it comes to that, and a lot of attention to emails, to phone calls, to you name it. It was the star in the district. And so it was under a microscope, and any little thing that happened, social media wise, I can't tell you how much shifting and jumping I had to do because of certain social media posts or those types of things that, again, at former schools, it wasn't nearly as big a deal. But in that school, getting into the right circles of certain messages, you have to stop what you're doing and deal with it. And that just took a lot of energy to do. I love the things that we were able to accomplish there. We went through a lot, but I loved all the things that we were able to accomplish there. And a lot of great memories and times there. But it did take a lot out of me. And because of that, those in the athletic training circles that used to see me at a lot of different things, it was like, gone. And I felt bad about that. But to do what I needed to do to make sure that I was the best principal I could be for that school, I had to make sacrifice. Because at the time, I had been elected the treasurer of the Far West. And I could only do that for a semester. Once I realized after a semester, I'm like, yeah, I can't multitask here like I used to be able to at my other places. It's just not going to happen. So I had to pull myself out of that position, unfortunately, and move on with other things.
Just too demanding. You had to take care of business, and that was it. I understand that.
To do it the way that I felt I needed to. Yep. Yes, I couldn't do due diligence to what the expectations were at that school, which were different than at my past schools, unless I made that full commitment. And that's the choice I wanted to make, as opposed to trying to half-rear end it, if you will. That's not That wasn't
That's
gonna
not you.
work out.
That's not you. You are a person that's all in or not in at all. So knowing you, stepping back from the position you were in at FWADA, those of us that knew you went, yep, that must be one hell of a job he's working right now. And I respected you for doing that because sometimes our egos get in the way. Of course, never with me. Egos get in the way and you want to be able to do everything. But those of us that want to do it to the best ability, we've got to know when to say when.
Absolutely. That's exactly what took place. And I don't look back. You know, I mean, I feel bad. I miss so many people that I used to hang out with in all the meetings. But that's again one of the reasons I retired my certification was I just couldn't go to the continue my CEUs. I'm still an athletic trainer at heart. I don't try to practice it. I have my knowledge, and there's a lot of things I've forgotten along the way, of course, but there's no way that I could have kept up what I needed to maintain my certification. So I had to retire. But although retirement's not bad, because I get to still be a member for free and
Well, that's not a
go
bad
to the
deal
different
there.
things.
I like
So
that.
yeah, that works out.
With your new role, CIF Commissioner of Southern Section, for those individuals that are listening that don't understand it because maybe they're in the collegiate setting or even in the community college setting, can you explain what the role of CIF Southern Section Commissioner is?
So the Southern Section is one of 10 sections in the state of California. The state of California, the CIF stands for California Interscholastic Federation, Federation being a conglomerate of different organizations within the same umbrella. The Southern Section is the largest in the state. It's comprised of 560 schools. If the Southern Section was its own state in the United States, we would be the ninth largest state when it comes to athletic associations. So it's a not an insignificant size. What we're responsible for handling are all the rules, the rules and regulations by which the sports go by, the clearing of transfers, the organizing of our playoff groupings and the championship finals and those types of things. And then obviously any concerns that come down regarding violations of this, that, and the other thing we're having to deal with on a given basis. You know, if a coach gets tossed from a game, we're going to hear about it, and we have procedures to address those types of things. So we're busy, unfortunately, a little bit busy with those types of things. But you know, basically overseeing athletics for a vast area of the Southern California.
So that's a pretty awesome role that you have now. How have you used that for collaborating with athletic trainers?
Well, that's a great question, and right about now is kind of a sweet spot for that, to be honest with you. My first year last year, I was just basically trying to get up to speed on things and just learning what needed to be done. The state actually has begun to make, when I say the state CIF has begun to make athletic training a priority. And it's something that I have been very pleased to see. I remember there was times not too long ago when I was governmental affairs chair trying to get the state executive director to sign a letter of support for us, and he wouldn't do it. And it's not because he didn't believe in the athletic training, but it's because the process by which the CIF gets recognized by state legislature, he didn't want to upset anybody that might not be in favor of athletic training, licensure, or whatever. He just didn't want to upset people. And I didn't agree with him that by signing this letter of support, it would hurt his cause, but we had these discussions. Now, and that I want to say that was maybe 10 years ago. Now, with the passage of the recent legislation, the current leadership thinks of it as our bill. And what are we going to do next to get licensure and for our athletic trainers? I'm like, that's a way different shift in mindset.
Wow, what a change in 10 years. Because I remember being around 10 years ago with all that negativity. What a
Yeah,
change.
it just took time. It took, you know, again, I've during that time I was become the member of the Sports Medicine Advisory Committee for the state, was continuing to have conversations about things. And the turn with that committee in itself, as well as the mindsets of the current leadership, you know, Ron Nachetti, great guy, Brian Seymour, again, they're all on board with it. We now have a committee that's been established to see about how the state can support athletic training in the high schools. And they're talking about at the next legislative opportunity. They want all 1,600 schools to write letters of support for our next legislative effort. That would never would have happened 10 years ago. So it's a nice change there. So the hope is with that is that, and I know on my website, when I say mine, the Southern section, we have an athletic trainer page where we have resources for a potential job description. We got a link to the salary survey that the NETA does. It's hard for me to put on there, hey, we should think you should pay athletic trainers this. But try to guide them in the right direction, if you will.
Well, and also it's up to the athletic trainers to negotiate those things with the, you know, resources given. You know what I mean? Is you all can, that's great that that information is being put up there, but hopefully the athletic trainers that see that support can then use that to step in and negotiate too.
Advocate for ourselves.
Advocate, yep. Yes.
And the presentation, I just made a presentation at the Athletic Administrator Summit we had earlier this month. Part of that presentation, you know, it was about investing in your high school athletic programs and, you know, talking about the full-time athletic trainer. And ideally you're thinking of at least a beginning teacher salary is what they should be starting at just because of the education and the experience that they bring in with it. And that's not been, you know, in the past we were always trying, we got to get the athletic trainers in there. And it's like, well, we didn't really talk about just find ways to get them in. Now I'm not promoting anything, but a full-time athletic trainer with an appropriate salary, because I don't think it's worthwhile promoting anything else, because we're not going to get anywhere if we're going to provide, well, do a stipend or no. It's got to be done the right way if I'm having my say with it, and that's what we're going to be promoting from here on in, as far as I'm concerned.
Excuse well, me. Obviously, you have our support with that, so let us know whatever you need. I remember collaborating this component, as Julie was asking, really went back several years, collaborating with CIF and you and another name, a colleague that we lost, Glenn Martinez, the collaboration that created the CIF Southern Section Committee on Sports Medicine. And I think that was probably my introduction into the understanding of how CIF interacted, but his ability to see and look forward, and I'm sure you had his ear a little bit to help him mold that. That creation, I think, was a tribute to you and to him seeing the future and being able to draw together CIF and athletic training. He was such a great guy and really saw so much possibility in our profession.
It's a tribute to Glenn. Glenn and I had known each other through athletic training circles and actually athletic administrator circles, if you will. When he got hired on, one of his things that he really wanted to do, one of the things in his interview we talked about establishing was an athletic training advisory group. And within his first few months on the job, that was one of the goals that he wanted to accomplish. I was fortunate enough that he reached out to me. We began talking about it and thinking through what that could be. And he asked me, hey, who are some individuals that you think could get us going on that? And so it was neat to help get that established with him, but it wasn't a function of me. It was Glenn Martinez really saw the value in it. And I was just fortunate enough that he reached out to me to get some information as far as the knuckleheads we could put on that committee to get it started. One of which is in this meeting with us that had his mute on for a second there.
Yeah, I see that. Knuckleheads. Well, Tim Masicki is on there. So yes, I have to agree. Tim, if you're listening, you are definitely one of the knuckleheads we are talking about, buddy.
No, I would. Well, when I say that in jest.
I know, me too.
Great group of people. And to this day, the meetings that we have are some of the loudest and most obnoxious in the building, just because the group that we have is very comfortable with each other. And we don't mind talking about certain things and getting things accomplished. And whereas some of these other committees, they're more sit and listen. This committee is, no, we do. We talk and we figure things out, which is I'm very proud of in many respects.
I think one of the best parts that I like about it, we all check our egos at the door and really allow it to be a forum to discuss issues, because there are some egos there. I'm sorry, Julie, I jumped in front of you.
No, I was just, for those that may not be familiar with how to become a part of these groups, what would you suggest they do?
They can always reach out to me and, you know, ask about things. Oftentimes I solicit the current members and say, is there anybody new in the ranks that are making a difference? I like individuals that don't mind their time that they come in or the time that they leave. You know, those that put in some extra time and are making a difference, if you will, with how they handle their business on a given site and make a reputation for themselves. Those are the ones that you want to have in, because you know that they're doers. They're not just going to sit and listen and not contribute. So I try to get some information from those current members that are there. But also I'll take some, you know, if they want to reach out and ask about it, I'll be happy to entertain that. But I'm also going to ask around and say, hey, this individual was has been asking about getting in. Does anybody know this individual? And is there a recommendation one way or the other? So there's it's not a strong vetting process, but there is a vetting process.
Got it. Thank you.
So out of curiosity, what section are you in, Julie?
We're in that North Coast section.
North Coast. So is that the northern one that envelops all the way up?
Yeah.
Very nice. Do they have a sports medicine advisory?
You know what? I am not totally sure. I know a lot of us talk with each other, and there's a lot of topics that we run through more county-wise right now. We're kind of concentrated on because our district just got 5 full-time athletic trainers in all the high schools. So we are trying to, for lack of a better word, weed out the gurus and kind of get things on the straight and narrow with kind of what we're doing in the athletic trainers who are not actually certified. My interest has been piqued of taking a look at that closer. I
So
know that
whoever
I have
that,
colleagues that are deeper into that.
I'm not sure who the executive commissioner is up there, Mike, but I happen to
Pat
know Julie
Cruikshank.
really well. We might want to reach out to that individual and just maybe toss her name in.
I'd be happy to serve, especially if
Careful
Eli tells me to and be voluntold, I guess.
what you say, because that's what got me here because of Mike. And yeah.
Well, that may also be a part of our you know, what we're trying to do to support athletic training across the state is that each section has a group that
They should.
can attack their own issues that they have in their given areas, because they do vary considerably in some instances. So I think that would be wise of every commissioner to find an avenue for it. Glenn Martinez started the first one in the state with us, as far as, you know, there had been the state sports medicine advisory committee, but the athletic training advisory group was unique to the Southern section for a short period of time.
Do you feel like some of the rules, this is totally, I'm curious about this. Some of the rules, as I read through them, if it were worded differently, it would really advocate for the athletic trainer, like allowing, I have nothing against the EMTs. Don't get me wrong, all a part of, very important part of the medical system, right? But what if only athletic trainers and MDs were allowed on the sidelines? You know what I mean? Or like a specific group, especially with our background in concussion education, concussion identification and heat illness, with some of the other professions don't have all of that, but are easier and cheaper to hire. Are you all looking at anything like that? I'm just curious. That's a me question. So Eli, you can probably cut this
No,
part out.
absolutely. That's a great question, and I get actually that
Phenomenal question.
occasionally. But here's the issue, and again, in the seat that I sit in, you got to think globally as far as from a 10,000 foot situation. Do we have enough athletic trainers to put in every single high school in the state? No. Do we have enough team physicians that are able to cover every single high school in the state? No. There are certain places, and I'm not even suggesting that's only rural. There are suburban and urban places that don't have the ability to do that if there was a quote unquote mandate. You know, in the southern section, we really only have one bylaw that addresses medical coverage, and that's in football. Before you start a playoff game, you've got to have either a licensed physician or a medical professional designated by the home team. That's the language.
Right, thanks.
So if a school chooses to make it an athletic trainer or a chiropractor or any other health provider, that is up to them, but it allows for that flexibility. Yes, it would be nice to say MD, DO, AT. That's it. Would be great. It's un that we'll we won't get there for eons, if ever, just because there will never be the opportunity to have that type of coverage and care mandated at all of our schools. There's 1,600 schools in the state. That's just not going to happen.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for answering it. I appreciate it. On my end, I push things to where, like, sometimes it forces the hand in my small world, right? Push wins, it forces the hand for the right decisions to be made sometimes, but I do understand that you are involved in the whole state, so.
Yeah, I understand the premise behind it, but then there's the ability to There's the unfunded mandate, number one. And then number two is the actual ability of our member schools to meet the requirements. And if we're putting in a rule where member schools just can't meet it, it can't be a rule.
Got it. That makes sense.
Peeling off of that just a tiny bit, I know the wording and the verbiage has changed in that bylaw over the years. And it's a good thing because I know I've never told you this. We were at a game, playoff game locally. It used to read, if I remember correctly, a designated physician for the home team. It was something a little more specific, designated MD, DO physician, I think was the word. And we showed up to a game and went across the way, introduced ourselves, and met the designated physician, who was not a physician, but he was designated for the day to be the physician for the game. And
Well, designated healthcare provider, that's still the language that's in there. So if the home school designates a given individual and they are the ones that are saying this is who is going to be our medical cover, then that's a part of the current language.
we might want to tweak it just a little bit, and this is just a suggestion, to a designated but licensed, certified, or something, because the person wasn't licensed, wasn't
If it
certified.
becomes licensed, then the school couldn't have an athletic trainer filling in that
That's why
role.
I said, or certified. This
See,
individual was not licensed,
the
certified
Mr.
healthcare
Nuance
provider.
here. I get what you're saying. Again, there's what we all believe should take place. There's what we all believe we want to take place. But then there's the realities of certain situations. Let's get to Blythe. Let's get to what are some Northern California, really hole in the wall places.
South Fork High School, Miranda, where I was, I love that place,
But and then
but
there's
nothing's
also
there.
right. There's also certain inner city schools that just, even though they might have people around, they just don't, for whatever reason, don't have access to things. So, yes, in an ideal world, we'd write the language the way we'd have the Athletic Training Association write that language. Not going to be the case.
And that makes sense. Globally, it makes sense. In our little world, unfortunately, it doesn't.
Right. And that's where we get our little opinions and we get on our high horses and we
Get on
say,
our soapboxes.
why is CIF so stupid? They should know better than to have this type of language and allow these things to happen because they should be smarter than that.
Hey, I've never,
Never said
ever
those
said
words.
anything like that. Julie, have you ever heard me say anything like that?
Not at all.
I know I've never heard you say anything like that.
No,
Oh, my.
we know it's a big job. We know, there's no easy way about it. So, thank you for what you're doing too, because you're bringing your skills from being an athletic trainer and administrator into a role like that. That, as parents see it, students see it when they get older, they're going to know that the experience was brought in for the health and safety of the athletes as well. So.
Well, let's hope, my at Martha King, we ended up having the tagline for our school, Leave a Legacy. And it's not like I'm trying to do anything intentional, but I would hope that by the time I'm done here, I mean, my predecessor left a tremendous legacy in so many ways, Rob Wygod. There's so many ways. I would hope that part of mine, when I'm done, might involve, the health and safety of our athletes being much more taken care of than maybe they were in the past. So we'll see. Proof's in the
So far, I think you're off to a great start. So,
pudding. We'll see how it goes.
biased opinion, but
To
look at a little reflection, what have been the most important lessons you've learned throughout your career, both as an athletic trainer and perhaps an administrator?
I think two things that have gotten me where I'm at. One of them isn't intelligence. It's just not. It's about handling my business in a professional manner that I think, again, when I, as I talked about the nonverbal communication, I think that speaks volumes. And if you don't, and it's not just what you wear, it's about how you do things. The fact that I always come in early and I always stay late isn't unintentional, but I don't, again, that just sends a message to the people that you work with and work around that you're prepared and in a professional. You look at the perceptions that you have of other people as they go about their business. You may, again, sometimes you say the don't judge a book by its cover. Cover could say a lot. And so I think that how I've gone about my business that way has helped me out quite a bit. and the relationships that I built. I'm generally an introvert. I actually am not a very talkative person when I'm at home, but when I'm on, when I'm at work, when I'm doing the things, I try to build positive relationships and collegial relationships that I think really set a tone in so many different ways. You know, you've got to see two sides of an argument. You've got to be polite and respectful. You've got to be able to manage tough situations, try not to take it personally, and find ways to be professional throughout all those types of things. And I think that I don't know if I would have been here if I wasn't successful in some way, shape, or form with doing those types of things and getting where I'm going. Because, like I said, I'm not necessarily the sharpest tool in the shed, but I think that I've handled myself as well as I could have, which has allowed doors to open that I've been fortunate enough to step through.
Now, believe it or not, we've already been sitting here an hour. That includes the few minutes prior that we were having technical difficulties today, which is always fun on my part. And I know I don't want to take too much.
You should have gotten here earlier, Eli.
What's that?
You should have gotten here earlier.
I'm telling you, I should have.
We were ready for you.
I was ready. My computer wasn't. Gotta love it when that happens. So I'm only going to ask one more question and really just would love to hear your insight on it. What advice would you give a young aspiring athletic trainer who's also interested in leadership in the profession? What's some advice you would give them now looking back?
That's a great question. I think that asking to getting involved doesn't do a lot. Get involved. Find projects that make sense. That and bring them to the leaders and say, this is what I want to do. But have already done the work. Don't go and ask, hey, what can I do? No, do something. And then bring the proof of the pudding that demonstrates the fact, again, nonverbal communication. You are somebody that has initiative, professionalism, depending on how you bring it forward, and truly has a desire to be involved, because waiting to get invited is not going to happen. Asking to get invited, okay. Again, you might make a name, but make a name for yourself. And then you can find avenues for leadership. Again, one of the things that I did a long time ago was I put out a survey to all the high schools and just to evaluate their athletic training programs. I'd send it out to the ADs. I still regret to this day I never published that, because I got so much data back from it. If you're talking about a response rate of close to 40%, and it was a 7-page document that I put out to people just so they could evaluate their own athletic training programs, and then they sent that stuff back to me. I had all this data I could have done with, and again, my bandwidth wasn't to the point where I could have, but if I had taken all that stuff and done a research paper and published, it would have been a really interesting thing. So you're curious, you want to know some things, you want to do some projects, I do it. Show it, and then find a way to get involved.
I like how you said you need to. Was it Julie get involved or truly get involved? I wasn't sure. I couldn't make that
truly
out.
Truly get involved.
Oh,
Julie's
truly,
already
truly
involved.
Get involved.
Thank you.
Julie's
Mark.
Already involved.
Yeah. Just checking. Just making sure.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah. I've been told that many times over my career here. A couple times by our guests too. So. Anyway, Mike, it was fantastic to see you. It's always great talking to you. I know you've got a heck of a day ahead of you, so I'll let you get on. But we want to say thank you for joining us today. Thank you for taking our questions and helping future athletic trainers get to where they're at, and those future ones to get a chance to hopefully be licensed someday in the state of California.
You never know. Thanks, Eli and Julie, for having me. This was a lot of fun. This is kind of a cool thing that you're doing, and maybe I'll listen to it. We'll see how it goes.
Hey, if you listen to one.
I don't necessarily always like the interviews that I do, but this was kind of fun. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks so much.
If you listen to one, that would be one more than my wife. So please let me know when you do it. Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot. Thank you, Julie, for co-hosting. Have a great day. And thank you for listening to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Have a great day, everybody.
Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Haller. It is produced by Gabriel Haller. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Halleck Consulting, LLC.